Succession number 27338, Reel 8.
How are the Americans seen by you now? You mentioned earlier on that you were pleased to know that they were in the war, but here they are, taking all the taxis, getting all the food at the canteen. How are they seen now as allies?
Well, I've always thought the world of the Americans, because they were very disciplined. If there was any lack of discipline, they just smartly put them into paddy wagons, and they're very courteous and friendly.
There were Catalinas in Perth?
Yes.
What do you recall of the Catalinas?
Well, I just remember them very well because Mother always had someone staying in the house who had looked after them. They'd see boys in the street by themselves, and this happened to a lot of people, and just invite them home. And she had staying with her famous airman, Ron Uren, and several of the Catalina boys. And their wives came over from Sydney, a few that we knew. So we saw quite a lot of the Catalina boys.
Talk about Uren. What was he like?
Oh, very fine man. He eventually was the pilot who took the Queen to Africa, I think it was. And they did have engine trouble and had to change the plane. But he was the pilot when Damien Parra filmed his Battle of the Coral Sea pictures. It was in Ron Uren's plane. He did it standing up, sort of over Ron's shoulder.
You're mentioning that your brother was in the Air Force. Where was he at this time?
He was in Burma. That's when he was killed.
When was that to happen? Do you recall?
That was in March 43.
That obviously bringing the war right home for you.
Yes, and for nearly everyone in our street seemed to lose a son, especially in the Air Force.
And you've been talking about the situation in relation to the Japanese. Presumably the threat to Australia wasn't as great as it had been, but they were still a real force to be reckoned with.
Yes, they were.
How were they generally seen at that time?
Well, I think everyone was very unhappy and uneasy because they made a line in Western Australia above which they didn't worry so much below a certain district.
Above the Brisbane line would be let go.
So they'd sort of planned for that.
Perth wasn't going to be under the Brisbane line, was it?
No, we were below it. But they did have the one unit there, the Armoured Corps, which didn't get away, but they patrolled the north. And they were very frustrated because they couldn't get away.
And you mentioned, obviously, Viv Bullwinkle. Now, you hadn't known her prior to the war, I understand, but she was to experience some pretty awful times with the Japanese, I understand.
Oh, yes. She had a terrible time.
Tell us what you know of her experience, if you can.
Well, I had her to speak a number of times, and the first time was at the RSL, and she was worried what she'd say, and I said, well, look, Viv, be honest, say what actually happened, don't sort of spare them. And that was the first time she'd really spoken about it, I think, because another lad, John Saunders, who'd also been a guest, saw her on the way home, sort of rather weeping in the corner. And I thought, well, perhaps it's the reaction of what she'd been through to say what it had been.
Some might say that it was actually quite a good thing that she'd finally spoken about it.
Well, then she did, and I heard her speak in Canberra to one of the biggest gatherings at the academy, and the 800 odd students were absolutely taken, you know, silent, because she didn't spare them from what she. But she got used to speaking after that.
Did she ever talk to you in private about the ordeal?
Oh, we asked her a few questions, which, you know, you wouldn't ask publicly. But I think she was very anxious not to dwell on it. But the books have been written and they're very revealing.
Tell us what you knew of her experience, if you can. She'd been taken
prisoner, yes. Well, it's a very simple story.
Can you tell us what you know?
I only know what's in the book until I met her after the war.
Obviously a difficult subject to talk about. Another difficult subject, obviously, would be the death of your brother. And please, don't tell us about it if you'd prefer not to. In what way did that affect your involvement in the war, do you think?
It affected me very much in New Guinea because he was shot down in flames. And every aeroplane you saw, you'd think, well, you know, what it would be like and what he suffered. And I couldn't bear to see a picture or anything with planes in it.
When you heard the news, obviously, it must have been devastating. Did it strengthen your resolve to be involved in the war, or did it weaken that?
It didn't make any difference. The thing was that, first of all, he was declared missing. So you build up your hopes and think, oh, well, surely, you know, he's all right. And then you hear the fatal news and you go through it twice.
People talk of the boys bringing the telegrams not being very popular.
Oh, well, it's generally a minister or a policeman. They made sure, well, they tried to, that the right person went. You know, but then you learn from their companions a bit here and a bit there. And the friends sort of write to you, and the CO writes.
Of the people that I've spoken to, often they would be met by members of the family in the street when they returned home, saying, "Do you know what happened to such and such? Do you know what happened to my father or brother, husband?" And them finding it very difficult. They would say, "Oh, I wasn't there," or
yes.
Was that something that you experienced from mates of your brother?
Well, they sort of protected each other. For instance, they went through their belongings and took what we said tents in the wall, and sometimes they'd borrow something or take something which didn't really matter for themselves. But his watch was returned, and they go through the letters, and I think this is what I think, and then make sure that they, you know, don't worry whoever's at home. A lot of the boys had several girlfriends or something like that.
Mm.
So I think they must vet their possessions. But they're very good. They send what they can back, because they have the things that they'd left in the camp, of course.
You were mentioning, obviously, that you'd come home on the 18th of February.
Mm.
Your brother was killed not long after that. When was it, during that time, what were you actually involved in doing? Were you taking leave? Were you retraining?
No, we were marching. Every morning we had to get up and march around the camp in Claremont. And I was called in to say about the news, and I went home. I was very mad because they only gave me 1 or 2 days leave, and Mother was devastated, cause and father. So you think that's mean.
Mm.
You're mad because you feel it's mean. Then you had to go back and carry on.
We mentioned this whole sort of, well, it is war and stiff upper lip and all that sort of thing. Having to come back and train, what did that involve? And how difficult was that for you to do?
Well, it was very difficult for us all because we'd had officer status and been treated as well as the sisters. And we had young sergeants who'd very much younger, who'd go and rub their finger along the wardrobe or something and say there's a bit of dust, and frustrating sort of stupid things that we thought.
Presumably these chaps hadn't been away to war.
They were sergeants, no. And we hated sort of saluting. But we got used to that. But when I got out of that, transferred to the Red Cross Field Force, my friend and I, a friend of mine and I, were both selected to join the Red Cross Field Force. And we just got our discharge at Claremont, and we were walking along the road where there was a lot of sand, and we saw a staff car coming with the flag and said, oh, you know, that's interesting. Wonder who's that? And, of course, they sailed by. We knew one person in it, and Red Robbie was. And the poor girls, because were punished and had to go marching early in the morning again, but we didn't have to. So that was, we felt a bit tough about that, because we were out of the army by then. So back to no saluting.
Well, in relation to being in the army, you presumably were expecting to go on to another area of combat. Am I right?
Yes, we had to be selected.
What did that selection process involve?
Well, all our Middle East girls were sent, most of them were sent overseas again. Some were sent our hospital, depending on the hospital you'd been with. But we were selected to go to New Guinea, and a lot were selected to go to the north of North Queensland.
What have you heard of New Guinea?
We haven't heard much about New Guinea.
What was the what presumably different weather conditions, different?
Oh yes, it was always terribly hot.
Mm. But what was involved in preparing yourself for the trip to New Guinea?
Well, we have to have different clothing. I just had a coffin that doesn't sound so...
Sorry, you were talking about preparations to go away again, and what that involved.
Can I think for a second, because during the three services...
Sorry, you were talking about your experience preparing to go to New Guinea. What were you being told about the experience? You mentioned lectures?
Yes, and we had to have a completely new set of uniforms and identification. We were WXs and when we went to New Guinea, and they added the F on, WFX for the women.
What did the F stand for?
I expect it was female. But we didn't like it.
Why not?
Because we went away as WXs. AIF.
Being treated differently at this point, would you say?
Very differently. Because when there's officer status, there are a lot more complications.
Were you in contact with American troops by this time?
We had some very good friends. One special one, my uncle took home to mother, who always was welcoming, and he told by his mother, Jimmy, if you're ever lonely, you go to church. And he was coming home from church when my uncle picked him up, and his name was the same as ours, Richardson. And he became a very, very dear friend. He was with the ships in Fremantle Harbour. But he took our places home then, so... There were no other really personal friends.
You mentioned you were getting lectures. Were you being told about the general situation in New Guinea at the time and what you might expect?
No.
My impression is that things were beginning to look up. Would that have been a strong feeling that you sensed?
Well, I suppose it must have been because they just pushed them back at the Kokoda Trail. I think if they hadn't done that, we probably wouldn't have been sent to New Guinea. But we still had quite a lot of casualties there.
Do you remember when it was that you were to go to New Guinea? Roughly?
No, not without looking at my diary.
All right, well, let's talk about that later. In relation to the situation, preparing to go to New Guinea, where were you sent prior to actually leaving?
We were sent to a camp in Queensland, the Fraser's paddock, and we had to start and sort of pack our own palliasses.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sort of started to learn the whole hard way about things.
You mentioned going to New Guinea would be different from North Africa. In what way were you being prepared for the climate, for the jungle, as opposed to desert?
There was no special preparation.
Malaria would be a problem. Were you having...
Oh, yes, very strictly. We had gaiters and boots and even hand... at night time, you weren't allowed to go to the latrines unless you dressed completely. So, and that's why a lot of the boys came in the wards, because they didn't take enough care.
What was the feeling like leaving Australia again for the second time on your way to New Guinea?
We were pretty frustrated in the way we were treated, because we, instead of having anyone to help us with the baggage, we were expected to cart it all ourselves along the wharf. And then when we got on the ship, they had sheets on our bunks, and they had them removed because we were only privates and weren't entitled to sheets. And everywhere you sort of felt sort of humiliated or frustrated.
So the trip away was a little less exciting than the initial trip on the Queen Mary that you'd taken.
Oh yes, I expect so.
Were you involved with any social activities at all on board ship going to New Guinea?
No, it was only a short journey. But, we had our sergeants keeping an eye on us, and they were fairly new, so they would think they'd be a bit unreasonable too. It was very hard to change.
Here you were, war-hardened VAD nurses, having to deal with young blokes who hadn't even seen combat yet.
I don't think we just felt they were soldiers. I mean, and they all didn't think of them like that. They'd all gone.
Must have been hard to take orders from people who are younger than you, who had no experience. That's the impression I get. Am I right?
Yes, well, they're a bit tough on us too, that our officers who took us to New Guinea sort of said, well, now you've had luxury time, you've got to start to work, you know, you can... Insulting things, we thought. We seemed to think that because we'd been to New Guinea, we just had a wonderful time.
Well, that was after you'd come back?
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that next time. Thank you.